It's Central Time. I'm Keely Voltina in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Ahead, a Democratic state lawmaker joins the show to share his reaction to the governor's budget proposal and to talk about what he's hoping to make progress on in the current legislative session. First, friendship is in crisis. We've been hearing about the problem of loneliness for years. Almost 50 million Americans over the age of 45, especially men, suffer from chronic loneliness. In 2017, the then Surgeon General Vivek Murthy declared it a public health epidemic. Younger generations are also reporting record levels of loneliness. Still, some people haven't actually stopped to think about whether we're one of those numbers. Our next guest has taken an attitude of denial himself, that is, until his editor assigned him to write a story on the very issue of loneliness in middle-aged men. And now, years later, he's made a book out of his experience. Billy Baker is a staff writer for the Boston Globe, where he writes narrative features and humorous columns, and his new book is called We Need to Hang Out, A Memoir of Making Friends. Billy, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me, Keely.
Let's use the way, way, way back machine. Before writing the book, kicked off by that reporting assignment, were you conscious of your growing loneliness or of people around you becoming lonely?
I think if I was feeling anything, it was that I was feeling like this is just how it is. You know, I was a middle-aged dad. I had two young boys. I had a wife. I had a career. And, you know, I had friends. I just wasn't seeing them. And it felt strangely like that's just how it was.
Those are reasonable things that take priority over friendship, and yet it's also like kind of an excuse that we just accept loneliness.
Loneliness in general, just even still hearing the word, it kind of clears the room. Like, it makes me feel slightly uncomfortable to talk about. And I think that's part of the problem. You know, I would have never identified myself as lonely because I didn't want to think of myself in those terms. But When I got this assignment dumped on me, or when I got conned into this assignment, I realized, you know, it was time for me to raise my hand and realize I was the typical guy. And sadly, the typical guy was suffering from what science would call high loneliness.
Talk more about that.
Well, so I guess the easiest way is to start with the assignment. So I got called into an editor's office at the Boston Globe magazine with this idea that they had a story I'd be perfect for. Which is one of the oldest lies in journalism. And so I march down to the office and sit down. And I'm like, lay it on me. And this editor looks across his desk at me and says, I want you to write about how middle-aged men have no friends. And so in that moment, as I'm having this like existential crisis of like, why me? I have a friend. What are we talking about here? The editor is laying all this data on me, the reason for the story, which is that there is this loneliness epidemic going on. It seems to be disproportionately affecting men. And even more startling was that it had these real dire consequences for not just your mental health, but your physical health. He starts laying this case that, like, every single thing you can think of that you don't want, cancer, heart disease, you know, diabetes, dying early, every single one of them is dramatically increased by not just being like chronically lonely, but being somewhat lonely. Even living alone greatly increases these chances. And, you know, when I initially got hit with this, my first thought was to try and get out of this assignment by rationalizing my way out and being like, I'm not perfect for this. I have plenty of friends. I don't know what you're talking about. But it really took just a short walk back to my desk to realize, you know, like as I started rattling through the names in my head of these people I think of as my best friends, it was like, I haven't seen that person in a couple of months. Like, I haven't seen that guy in years. Like, what happened? And what happened is a story that seems to be happening to all too many Americans nowadays.
Right. This distance kind of begins and then suddenly it's weeks and then suddenly it's months and you realize you haven't connected with people, especially, I mean, now we can't avoid the fact that you started this pre-pandemic. I mean, you took on this article, even this book before we were all told, hey, to stay safe, you need to keep your distance. How do you think the pandemic has affected loneliness or this lack of friendship? Considering all you figured out right before it happened.
I mean, I think there's no question it's exacerbated the problem, but I'm kind of a naive optimist where I'm hoping that we springboard out of this. Like it's a absence makes the heart grow fonder situation, where we realize how important social connection was to us, and now we're willing to take action. I mean, I feel like since the pandemic arrived, I've heard from so many long lost friends with this, like, as soon as this is over, we need to get together, you know, and I hope that is true. You know, my book is called We Need to Hang Out, which is kind of a directive, but it's also references the idea that that's the sort of thing we say to each other a lot as adults. But how often does it happen? And this book really was about my journey to make it happen and to show how weirdly difficult it was to do that.
Billy Baker's a staff writer for the Boston Globe. His new book is called We Need to Hang Out, a memoir of making friends. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You're part of this conversation. Have you ever reached out to reconnect with old friends? Have you found yourself doing that more these days? Or because you're keeping your distance, you realize it's a lot easier to just sit back and not talk with people. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Springboarding off of what you just said, Billy, something that resonated with me was this description of waves of outreach from people. Like, you wrote the article, people reached out to you. You wrote a follow-up, and then you heard another wave of things. I feel like we don't have to write articles to experience that. You know, something happens in someone's life, terrible or wonderful, you share that news and you generate this buzz in these conversations, and then slowly it just kind of creeps back to that silence again. Have you heard that from other people, or is it just me?
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something. I struggled for a while. So when I wrote the article, it became such a big viral hit that it felt like every person I'd ever met read it. And so in the original article, I kind of raised my hand and admit, you know, I've structured myself into being a little bit of a loser. I don't have any space in my daily life for friendship. And I mean, everyone I knew bent over backwards to reach out and say, oh, I always knew you're a loser. But we were connecting. And it was connecting in a nice way, because I feel like the ways it often happens are like, you know, it's at a funeral where you say, oh, we can't let this go on any further, you know. And so, you know, initially I write this article, becomes this weirdly viral hit. At the time, we believe it was the most popular article the Boston Globe had ever published, which just blew my mind. It was about male loneliness. And interestingly, it was surpassed by an article titled, Here's What Tom Brady Eats in a Typical Day, which I read. So it becomes this thing, and so many people are reaching out to me. And what was interesting was, you know, by raising my hand, I kind of created a safe space for other men to raise their hands, and women as well. But the reaction was never like challenging me on this evidence or wanting any more proof that there really was this cancer. It was more like, well, what's the cure? And it, in a weird way, it's like the easiest answer in the world, right? Like, the cure for loneliness is friendship. But actually making friendship a part of your life as an adult, it's what the book is about. It was this like comedy of errors. I went on these like journeys. At first, my natural reaction was to like get the band back together, to try and reconnect with friends from the past. I tried to reunite my high school class, some college buddies, and I had some success. But ultimately, I realized that if I really wanted to have, you know, the benefits that come with friendship, what I needed to do was to build friendship into my daily life. And I'm someone who, I think a lot of people in America are in this category now, I no longer live where I grew up. You know, I'm in a new community. And so I had to do one of the most awkward things there is to do, which is to try and make new friends. Or in my case, to kind of convert acquaintances into friends, because I think I was guilty of thinking this would just happen naturally. You know, I'm a parent, I'll meet the other dads on the sideline at the game, and we'll grab a beer or whatever. But like, everyone was kind of, it seemed, locked into the same, you know, cycle of commitments, where that those beers were few and far between. Those weekends when you say you're going to get away, they're few and far between. But to actually, you know, get all these benefits that science tells us you can get from friendship, you need to have friends. You need to have a way to be friends with your friends. And so that's what the journey was really about, trying to figure out what that is. And ultimately, I started using this phrase, I called them velvet hooks, which was to try and find these things that can connect you, a way to an activity that allows you to be friends with your friends. And, you know, the word velvet is nice because it's like soft. No one wants another ironclad commitment. And we know what these things are, right? They're like the weekly book club or the weekly, you know, adult sports league or the fantasy football league, whatever it is. I just need to define those with each of the people that I really wanted to connect with.
We're talking with Billy Baker, who's written a new book called We Need to Hang Out, A Memoir of Making Friends. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you found yourself getting older and realizing you haven't talked with the people you've considered friends maybe for years? Do you or have you made an effort to have some sort of regular meetup in person or virtual with friends? Tell us about your experiences. Share what you've learned about maintaining or creating or maybe losing friendships. 800-642-1234. There's a line for you there, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. Thanks for being with us on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Right now, we are talking with the Boston Globe staff writer, Billy Baker. We're talking about his new book, We Need to Hang Out, A Memoir of Making Friends. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you think we have a loneliness problem? Do you think we need to prioritize friendship in our lives? How do you even begin to do that these days? Call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We've got Marcus in Milwaukee on the line willing to talk with us here. Hey, Marcus.
Good afternoon. So I'm 41, and I personally feel like what I've observed is that with, you know, like couples, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, it's usually historically been left to the female to kind of be the social planner per se. And so like when that part is removed, I've noticed that as men age, they just lose that because they haven't been active in taking part in that, you know, in terms of staying in contact with people. I also feel like that society, to a certain extent, looks at men as like, you know, we're supposed to be tough, we're supposed to be independent, so we feel like we should not be relying on others as much. And then also that with that being part of it, it's also kind of touchy-feely, you know, and I'm not saying that I believe this, but it seems like that's kind of historically been the precedent that it's like, you know, like reaching out to say I'm lonely or I miss you as a man, it's like, no, you're supposed to be tough, but, you know, buck up and, you know.
Yeah, Marcus, thanks so much for bringing that up, because I think it's a really important point here. Billy, what do you hear as Marcus is saying, I think society expects men to not need other people?
I mean, it's 100% true. It's there's this strange soloist idea, this idea of kind of being this man's man, keeping a stiff upper lip, but you know, it's friendship is something that falls in the same, you know, category as a romantic relationship. You know, for it to mean something, there has to be some vulnerability there. And that's just something that men are just raised to avoid. You know, it's a sign of weakness. You know, as I went on this journey, ultimately, I had to make myself vulnerable in the most awkward ways, like really embarrassing things that I tried to set up. And I have to say that one of the beauties of getting old is that in each case, that vulnerability was rewarded, you know, but that doesn't mean it's easy for people at, you know, younger stages in life. And, you know, there's definitely problems here. I mean, there's issues of being shouted down as, you know, being feminine or weak or whatever it might be. If you do show any sort of like emotional honesty, male to male.
And even now, you know, you're saying you had to go through some embarrassing things, like they still feel embarrassing to you.
Oh God. I mean, what I ultimately ended up doing was trying to start like a Wednesday night fraternity. Like I got to this point in my journey where, you know, I would look out the window and be like, you know, I've done a lot of work, but I still don't have anyone to hang out with on a Wednesday night. So I tried to start this club that, you know, like a boys club that meets in a barn. It was the simplest thing in the world, but I invited a bunch of guys and I went, got there a little early, and I sat in that barn, and it was like I was back in sixth grade again, like afraid to walk into the school dance, like the nerves, that I mean, vulnerability is the only word for it. Like I felt like I'd, you know, I could have been walked all over, but it didn't happen. And I think it's because, you know, in every case when it's like I reach out to an old buddy, say, I miss you, we should hang out, like, they're thinking the same thing. It's just for some reason we've been trained to think that that's just not a thing to do. You know, not in every case, but it was a barrier in a lot of my friendships. And thankfully, those barriers are falling. The more I'm willing to say, hey, I kind of screwed this up and I want to get this straight.
You've done so much reaching out, put so much intention into inviting people to do things with you. Honestly, it sounds exhausting. Is it tiring? I mean, is it worth it?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the person I am at the end of this journey, and as opposed to where I began, it's hard to, like, I feel like I'm faking it a little bit as I'm doing these publicity rounds and talking about, like, this lonely person that I was, because I don't feel that way anymore. And it was about, like, I mean, the book, you know, I got this assignment, I delved into the science, I pulled out a lot of this really fascinating stuff, and then I basically used it in a selfish way. I tried to hack my own life and fix some things. And there were so many things that were, like, so illuminating. Like, one that's very important that I kind of want to get out there is that when science studies the way people interact, there's a clear difference in the ways that men interact versus the way women interact. And women talk face to face, and men talk shoulder to shoulder. And this is known from these things called photo studies, where a sociologist kind of creep around and take pictures of us unawares interacting. And when you analyze them, it's there. And when we think about that idea of shoulder to shoulder, it goes back to this idea that men tend to bond over an activity. And it's why sometimes I think, you know, before all this, when I'd see an old friend and we'd say we should get together to get some coffee or something like that, it didn't sound all that appealing. But if the same person had said, hey, do you want to come over and help me chop down this tree in my backyard? Like, I would have been there at 6 a.m. Like, and so, like, I was using the science to, like, hack my friendships, and it worked. You know, this book is, if I'd have to describe it anyway, it's like a comedy. It's watching some guy just comically fail over and over until ultimately I kind of use the tools of science the science of loneliness to hack the code of friendship in some ways, or at least for me.
Billy Baker is a writer who's got a new book out about his experiences maintaining friendships. And we're taking your calls on this at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you have enough friends? Do you feel like you are connected? Where do you think we fall short when it comes to creating and maintaining friendships? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We've got Mike from Sun Prairie on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hey, have you ever studied this in former GIs?
Why do you ask, Mike?
Well, because it seems like we have a tendency to get together and hoop it up, but it generally involves a little bit of beer and foolishness and lying. And the other thing is that the wives aren't all that fond of it. So
the wives aren't all that fond of it. I got you, Mike. Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, Mike here bringing up saying veterans tend to hang out better with each other. We also had Mark from Fort Atkinson call who said that there are positive effects of organized religion on this and that church creates a sense of community. So there are things or experiences that do bond us, Billy.
Oh, there are definitely things that work, and it's a matter of, like, going to them. And if, you know, if you have a tribe, nurture it. If you don't have one, you have to find one or create one. And I think that was ultimately what I realized was I just didn't have active membership in a tribe. And to go back to the idea of soldiers, there's a great book by Sebastian Younger, who's famous for writing the book The Perfect Storm. But he spent a few years as a war correspondent, came home and found that he was kind of miserable and that he had been happier in these dire circumstances, and started delving into that issue for veterans in general. And it was found that a lot of them, you know, the PTSD and all these issues were based on their feeling of loss of a tribe, of being necessary to others. So it's wonderful to hear that, you know, I mean, as the caller said, beer and lying and acting like juveniles, that seems to work for men across the board. But it's great to hear that, you know, former GIs are getting together and doing these things, because, you know, we know from surveys that, you know, when you ask a man, when did you make your best friends? They're invariably going to say, like, childhood or school or military service or sports, these places where you're going through something together with others. Those are the things that just disappear as we get into adulthood. So really, to get back on the right track, it's about finding those things to continue to go through with others again.
Bob in Kokana called, couldn't stay with us. Bob said that once in a while, Bob looks through the phone, sees the name of an old friend, and just calls them. And they always thank Bob for calling when they're done chatting. That sounds like one of those things that you just put forth the effort and try, even though Bob says his kids make fun of him for it.
It's funny. The phone has a weird stigma amongst men. Some are good at it, but you know, again, we know from the science that women are able to maintain deep friendships over the phone, but men struggle with that. And so I have a few guy friends that are great about picking up the phone. I'm trying to become better, but I have to admit, there's something for me that about 30 seconds into a phone call, I'm like, all right, I'll see you later. Even if that later is years from now, you know, I'd much rather put something on the calendar and get together than I don't know, talk over the phone. There's something about it where I think I'm envious of those who can do that.
Well, there are awkward moments when you can't see someone, but you can hear them when you're talking. You're not sure when you talk or when they should talk or what you should talk about. And that's something that human beings just have to deal with, I think.
Oh, I mean, you're doing a good job on this radio program right now, because, you know, I'll say something and then I just pause. I hope it's your turn to talk, but it is a weird thing. I mean, and you know, you're losing facial expressions. I mean, I don't know if you're noticing this, but I'm having a real hard time connecting with people with masks on. Like, I don't know how my joke lands. I don't know what if they're you know, like I never realized how much the lower face was necessary to human connection and understanding. But it, you know, again, this is one of those things where I hope we springboard out of COVID and we enter hopefully a new golden age of friendship, because I don't think we've ever appreciated our friends more until they were taken away.
Right. And how much you wind up, you know, really developing trust with someone, because friendship has to be based on trust. And if you can't see their face, or if you can't really gauge them from afar, that makes it really difficult. We're talking with Billy Baker, who has a new book out about maintaining friendships. It's called We Need to Hang Out, A Memoir of Making Friends. And we're talking about friendships, all kinds of friendships, but especially maintaining friendships as men. And we want to hear your thoughts. Do you feel like you're connected? Do you think we value our friendships enough? What are you seeing and feeling right now as we deal with the pandemic, or even before that? Give us a call. There's room for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Billy isn't going anywhere. Our conversation continues. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. Our guest has written a book about making friends. He says he wanted to explore midlife, where so many things are vying for our attention and friendships get shuffled down on the list of priorities. Billy Baker is talking with us. His new book is called We Need to Hang Out, A Memoir of Making Friends. And we want to hear from you. You're part of this conversation, and there's time for your call at 800-642-1234. Do you think we need to value our friendships more? How do you think we can do it? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Mike in Algoma is on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've got a couple comments. One is that over the years, I've come up with a philosophy that to have friends, you've got to be a friend. So it requires a lot of effort to reach out, and hopefully who you're reaching out to recognizes it and reciprocates. The second thing is that I think the Internet has really screwed up relationships. It used to be that you'd have to pick up the phone to talk to somebody or else go to their house. Then we had emails, and you could email things like, yeah, it was good talking with you the other day, and I hope we can get together again. And then with messaging, now all you got to do is hit a little emoji, and it's thumbs up or okay or something like that, and that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for bringing up those points. I want to make sure our guest has a chance to get to it. Billy, what do you think of Mike's assessment?
Oh, I mean, the social media is the big question, and the science at the moment is kind of caught in a chicken and the egg situation, where we know people who spend a lot of time on social media are lonelier, but we don't know if that's why they're going to social media. But I've yet to meet a person who doesn't feel in their gut that there's something sort of wrong with the whole thing. And so I, as part of this journey to test it out, I got rid of all my social media. And sure enough, it eliminated, you know, these sort of shortcuts in the sense where I would see a friend, we'd have to catch up, I'd have to hear what's going on, rather than maybe I had a Cliff's Notes version of their life. And it also eliminated those like minor annoyances where I might be upset with someone because of their politics or some statement they made or whatever it might be. It feels like, you know, when we get together in a room with people, we're much more likely to get along and to be kind of yes and in the conversation than to be sort of divisive or, you know, black and white. And so for me, social media was something I said goodbye to, and I don't ever see myself going back.
Jeff in Viola is ready to join the conversation now. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello, and good afternoon. I was listening to this. I'm 68, and I do have one good friend, a male friend, back to fourth grade. We see each other once a year or so. But, you know, most of my friends are women. I'm married, happily married, and all that stuff. But I work in a profession. I'm a social worker, and I hang out with women, and they got a lot to say most of the time. You know, people I'm interested in. I might have one or two guys that I hang out with once in a while, but, you know, more often than not, I'll pick up a phone or email or go and meet somebody that's a woman friend, and, you know, which is kind of interesting. We're talking about men to men. And I got a few men, but I probably name more women. So I'm just commenting on that fact that I like friendships. And, you know, I'm a regular guy.
Yeah. And Jeff, I'm going to hop in here because you're breaking up and we've heard what you've got to say. And Jeff, thanks for sharing that. And Billy, I mean, Jeff has a point here, and it especially makes some sense given the science that you've already talked about that, you know, women are just more likely to work to maintain friendships in a different way than men are. So if Jeff is friends with women, he might consider them or talk to them more often.
Oh, he's 100% right. When I took a step back and looked at my friendships that were working very well, they were almost invariably with women. And I mean, there's a lot about this in the book, but I mean, women are, for many reasons, better at friendship. It starts, like, you know, with the size of a woman's hips and the birth canal. It's a very long story, but I kind of avoided that in the book because it was working. What wasn't working were these male friendships, but women, like I did this kind of silly experiment where I wrote down the names of everybody I cared about. I was trying to prove out this theory known as Dunbar's number, which says that we can only have 150 meaningful relationships in our life. And when I put all those names on a post-it note and posted them on my wall, more than half were women. You know, it was. You know, I'm so thankful to have women in my life and to learn from them. But the issue, you know, the biggest problem in this whole story seems to be men being friends with other men. And it's vitally important to them, to their health. So that's where I focus the book. I also didn't focus much on female friendships because that's an area where there is already a lot of literature out there. And as I say in the book, the only thing I know with absolute certainty about women is that they don't want a man speaking for how they feel. So it didn't feel like my place to be writing about those relationships.
We're talking with Billy Baker about his new memoir about making friends and hanging out with them and trying to maintain those friendships. And we've got Casey from Rice Lake who's ready to talk with us. Hey, Casey.
Hi. Yeah, my question is more like I understand totally about raising the kids in your 40s and just not having the time to dedicate during your career the amount of time you want to friendships. And then you retire and you kind of want those friendships and are looking for that. But my question more has to do with thinking about when you want to move closer to your kids or move from a place you've always known for 30 years and pick up and move an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours to a new place where you don't know anyone and you're in your 60s. And how do you pick up and create new friendships in a new community.
Yeah, Casey, thanks for that point. And Billy, I don't want to get ahead of you here, but it sounds like, Casey or whatever circumstance she's talking about could go back to the idea of activities, of things to happen and experiences together.
I mean, it's 100% true. There are so many things that can land in the way of your social life. I mean, it could be death, divorce, you know, whatever it might be, moving. But, you know, again, it goes back to sort of taking some work, thinking it through with, you know, what is it that makes things work, you know, finding your velvet hooks. And there was something that was actually very liberating for me, which is this quote I heard from the actress Mindy Kaling on her TV show. It was kind of like a throwaway line, but she said that a best friend is not a person, it's a tier. And something about that made me feel free to try and add new best friends to my life, because we know from surveys that when you ask someone about their best friend, they're going to name someone they go way back with. But by sort of flipping my thought process, it allowed me to pursue new best friends and not feel like I was betraying the ones from my past. So, you know, if you have to move, you know, you need to find a new best friend. I mean, you need to stay connected with the ones that, you know, you're leaving behind. But at the end of the day, like you need friendship to be part of the priorities in your daily life. If I was guilty of anything, it was that, you know, I woke up every morning, it was like, I got to deal with my job, I got to take care of my kids, go to the grocery store, I should probably do some exercise. But nowhere on there did I think friendship, you know, that it had to be something I did each day. But the data is very clear. If you don't want to see the doctor, see your friends. And that's like way easier and more enjoyable than eating your broccoli.
And life is better now.
Oh, I mean, I'm a spoiled human. As we speak, I'm getting text messages from my new group of friends I created about all of us gathering at the gym tonight to play pickleball, which is like tennis for people that don't want to run all that much. So I'm a spoiled person. And hey, while I have you, let me ask you, how is your friend life? How are you doing?
It's making me think, I'll tell you that. It's making me think about a lot of the different layers of friends that I have and when I reach out and when it just feels like too much effort. And I think after this, I might send a few messages and see if people have time. And I hope that other people listening consider that too. So, Billy, thanks so much for telling us so much about yourself and about what you found through writing this book. It's been really interesting, this conversation. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this was fun. Thanks for having me.
That was Billy Baker, a staff writer for the Boston Globe, where he writes narrative features and humorous columns. His new book is We Need to Hang Out, a memoir of making friends. Coming up, a Democratic state lawmaker talks with us about the governor's budget proposal. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Coming up tomorrow on the morning show, Barron County in northern Wisconsin has been using restorative justice programs since 1999. Hear from two leaders to understand how it works, how they measure success, and what other communities should know. That's tomorrow at 8 o'clock right here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. Governor Tony Evers released his state budget proposal last week, a $91 billion plan that would increase state spending by about 10%. The legislature will be busy for the next few months with amending that plan, eventually voting on a budget. And the current legislative session runs until December 31st, giving lawmakers time to take up other bills later this year. Right now, we're getting the thoughts of a Democratic state lawmaker about the governor's proposal and other issues he's looking forward to working on. Evan Goyke is a Democrat representing the state's 18th Assembly District in Milwaukee. We talked to them earlier today. Last week, Governor Evers released his proposed state budget. It's for the next 2 years. A lot of boost for education spending, broadband internet, small business help, lots more. Republicans in the legislature have said they're not happy with most of the proposal. What's your reaction to the plan that the governor provides?
It's an exciting budget that both addresses the immediate needs of our recovery from COVID and the economic impact that the pandemic has had in Wisconsin, but also looks beyond. And it's about our resilience and where do we go and how do we grow in the next 2 years. And it's a very exciting budget for me to work on. There are a number of initiatives that, that continue to need to be brought up in Wisconsin, like expanding Medicaid access, and also initiatives that really have started to get some debate time and some real bipartisan interest, like criminal justice and juvenile justice reform, but that we haven't really finished that work, and the budget offers the opportunity to get those done. So I'm really excited to get to work on it.
Yeah, and we can talk about those. I do wonder, what will you really push to keep in the governor's plan?
Well, you know, at this point, you know, we're still going through the budget, but we're really excited and happy with the investments that the governor is proposing in healthcare. Again, Medicaid expansion, 38 states around the country have already done this. Congress is debating additional funding. We know that 90,000 Wisconsinites would be directly benefited, and we would save over $500 million in the next 2 years, which we would reinvest. So whether you're on Medicaid or not, this is a proposal that would benefit you if you're rural, suburban, or urban. So this will be, again, a major priority for Democrats in the legislature. You mentioned school funding, you know, historic proposed investments in K-12, including in special education, which will be a focus, but also the UW system and technical colleges. There are exciting investments that the governor has proposed to continue to make a UW education or a technical college education accessible and affordable. And those are investments that Democrats are really excited to help see happen.
You talk about them as investments. It's $91 billion for this budget, about a 10% increase in overall state spending, coming as we're recovering from the worst of this COVID-19 recession. Parts of the economy still aren't fully open. So at a time like this, is this the right move?
Absolutely it is. And the governor has built this budget on revenue increases targeted at those that make, for example, over $400,000, or capping tax credits that would still allow the program to benefit businesses, but would limit the size of that business's benefit. This moment really strikes me as the exact time to make these investments. You mentioned in the question about industries or areas of our economy that are still struggling to come back. There are a lot of workers from those industries looking for education or training or retooling of their careers that, so example, talking about technical college investments, this is the exact right time to make those investments, because we know that COVID has displaced workers that may need additional education or training to find a good fit for themselves in the economy. I do not believe that the revenues within this budget would have any kind of negative economic impact because of the way they're reinvested in the budget. I think this budget would see economic growth, especially within people living in poverty and the working poor that are really struggling to make ends meet. This budget invests in job training and in educational opportunities. We need those people firing on all cylinders in our economy.
As you go through the governor's plan, what is in the budget that you stand against?
I haven't found much right now. There's a lot, as you mentioned. There's a lot that's in there. I'm just so excited. I'm optimistic as I read this. I see this as a budget that we can accomplish things on. So I'm not itemizing anything that I want to see removed. I'm focused on the investments that are possible and the opportunity for bipartisanship that exists, something that I've worked on in my career in changing and reforming our criminal justice system. There are a number of initiatives in this budget that mirror policies that have passed on a bipartisan basis in other states. And it's time that Wisconsin follows suit. And that's where I'm going to give my time and attention.
Evan Goyke is a Democrat representing the state's 18th Assembly District in Milwaukee. We're talking about the state legislature and the budget. You're listening to Central Time. You have a forthcoming bill, Representative Goyke, that I understand has some bipartisan support already. It expunges criminal records of people convicted of nonviolent and low-level crimes. What are the changes you'd like to see in how the state handles criminal records?
Well, the biggest change in this proposed legislation is the procedure, the process by which courts handle these cases. Wisconsin currently has a unique legal structure. We're the only state in America that uses this process, and it requires judges to make someone eligible for expungement, clearing or sealing their criminal record, at a very inopportune moment, and it closes the door for thousands of people that are otherwise should be eligible. We also only limit expungement opportunities to people that are 25 years or younger. That puts us in the minority of states. Most states do not limit that just to young people. So what our proposal does is it changes these court procedures. It eliminates that age restriction, and it will give people in Wisconsin the ability to come back to court. It doesn't guarantee that their record will be expunged. It just gives them the opportunity to have a day in court to tell the judge that they've rehabilitated themselves and turned their life around. And we protect against people getting multiple expungements or expunging multiple prior offenses. This is really targeted at lower level offenses and individuals that have this one prior conviction.
At the end of his time in office, former Governor Scott Walker signed off on a plan to close the state's youth prison in Marathon County, replace it with regional facilities. That idea has hit funding snags. The state probably won't meet the summer deadline for closing the Lincoln Hills site. So now Governor Tony Evers has proposed getting rid of the Tier 1 and Tier 2 labels for these youth facilities, replacing them with regional centers around the state. What are your thoughts on what the next step should be when it comes to juvenile offenders in Wisconsin?
Well, I think the governor has proposed a really wise plan. And what has happened in the years since that initial legislation was passed and today, it has been a continued reduction in the number of juveniles incarcerated. So when the legislature was debating that previous bill and when former Governor Walker signed it, there were about 150 to 170 juveniles incarcerated. Tonight in Wisconsin, there's between 60 or 70. So pretty substantial change. And local communities like mine in Milwaukee continue to adopt and advance community-based alternatives. They're having great outcomes. And so we believe that this trend of the reduction of the number of kids in prison will continue. And thus, it's a good moment to revise what we need. We don't want to overbuild youth prisons in Wisconsin. We certainly don't want to spend more money than we have to, but we don't want to build more prisons than we need. And so what the governor is proposing is really an update. And it based on what has changed in the years since the legislature passed that initial bill.
Do you think that is an issue that can create common ground between a Republican majority in the legislature and Democrats?
Well, yes, and because we've already done it. I was a part of those discussions in drafting that legislation and the debate, and we showed in that process a few years ago that we could put our party affiliation aside and work together. And so all we need to do is do it again. And I think that this is an issue that a lot of legislators have worked passionately on for years, and they want to see the conclusion. There's a lot of bipartisan frustration that we haven't reached our goal and that Lincoln Hills is still open. And there's also a lot of bipartisan support for getting the job done.
Always lots to talk about. Representative Goyke, we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Evan Goyke is a Democrat representing the state's 18th Assembly District in Milwaukee. He talked with us earlier today about the governor's budget proposal and where he sees potential common ground with the Republican majority. Tomorrow on Central Time, you can hear from a Republican state senator. Patrick Teston joins us to explain his priorities and his latest work to provide dental care in areas of Wisconsin where people don't have reliable access to it. Also tomorrow, the governor's plan for Wisconsin's next budget includes help for schools to remove Native American mascots. Hear from a school board member who's an advocate for changing those mascots. You can do that right here on Central Time tomorrow. It is from 3 until 6. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network. We appreciate you being here every weekday. We say it'd be like winning the lottery because the odds are pretty bonkers for getting a winning lottery ticket. Apparently, a Port Edwards man is an exception. At the end of January, the man won $121,000 playing Badger 5 Lotto. Less than 2 weeks later, he won again, this time $50,000 in the Powerball. The double lucky winner is Norman Fuller Jr. He's a retired veteran who frequently plays the lottery. In a release, he says he's happy to be debt-free and plans to share his winnings with his family. He doesn't think his luck has run out, though. Fuller says he'll continue playing lotto games. And in case you're curious, both of Fuller's winning tickets were quick picks purchased at a quick trip in Wisconsin Rapids. We want to thank everyone who donated during our winter member drive now. Support from people like Ryan from Stevens Point powers the daily conversations and the smart entertainment that you value here on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you missed the drive, there's still time to join in with your donation, and you can ask for your WPR t-shirt or your water bottle. Do that at WPR.org. Your gift now plays a vital role in keeping Wisconsin informed and connected. Thank you. I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to Central Time. This is the Ideas Network.